engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
I guess it depends. If you're Jude Allison. Welcome. It's Eric Erickson here. News 95.5 AM 750 WSB. The phone number 404-872-0750. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Wow, breaking news. Lynn Westmoreland, congressman out of Peachtree City, is going to retire from Congress. Already getting phone calls, a ton of phone calls from people asking me if I got a pick in there. I might know someone who would be very good for that job. I'm reaching out to him to see if he's interested. Might get a quick endorsement for me out of this for a candidate in that race. I want to get into that and the implications of it in Lynn Westmoreland's history. And rumors are he wants to lay ground for a governor's race or something. There's headline in the AJC today. Sam Olens may have unintentionally or intentionally taken himself out of the race for governor with his statement on Syrian refugees. Couldn't be helped. He's following the law. I want to begin somewhere else, though. And this may make some of you a little angry with me, but I want to lay out my thinking on this for you. Because there's an issue happening right now in the U.S. Senate that affects Georgia directly. You see, there's a state court judge in DeKalb County. His name is Dax Lopez. And he has been nominated by the president to be a federal judge. And the problem for Dax Lopez that you need to know for the U.S. District Court in Northern District of Georgia is that, well, he supports immigration reform. And before he entered into being a judge, his political positions, he was very aggressively for immigration reform. And people are upset. Conservative activists are upset about Dax Lopez. Because he's for immigration reform. Folks, I am told, rather privately, although I can say publicly, that the Democrats and the Republicans are structuring deals for this year and what they will do. And one of the issues is going to be judges to be approved. And one of the judgeships that the president is very concerned about is the Northern District of Georgia. There have been a number of hurdles getting a judge along the way for the seat, and the president wants the seat filled. Here's what I'm telling you. If you're not going with Dax Lopez to be a judge, there's going to be a vote. It's going to come to the floor. And all of the Democrats and a handful of Republicans are going to vote for someone to fill that seat. And you're not going to get a better nominee than Dax Lopez. That's a fact. Dax Lopez, of all the judicial picks by the president nationwide, he's probably the most free market, most willing to understand that business needs to be able to do business. He's going to be the best pick you could hope for from the president of the United States for Georgia. He is the least liberal nominee I think the president has probably put on the bench nationwide at a district court position. Members of the Conservative Federalist Society have come out in favor of him. A number of Republicans have come out in favor of him. I'm just telling you. You don't go with Dax Lopez. There's a deal being cut in Congress on judicial votes. And if you're not going with him, you're going to get some wackadoo liberal and there are going to be enough Republicans to vote for that person. So either go with Dax Lopez or we're going to get a judge on the bench who's far worse for business, far worse for freedom, far worse for individual liberty than he is. And he's not bad on any of those issues, including individual liberty. He's not. DeKalb County State Court Judge, a lot of my Republican friends up there, conservatives, all of them, a lot of them Ted Cruz supporters even, all like him, think he's a good guy, think he'd be a great judge. It is the immigration issue that is the hurdle. Guess what? He's not going to have a role to play in that issue on the federal bench in the Northern District of Georgia. He's just not. So I would say Johnny Isaacson, David Perdue, go on and let him go to the floor and vote for him. Get him on the bench. I think it's the right thing to do. I think that he would be far better than anyone else we would get down the line. And I hope that Purdue and Isaacson will take that into consideration, that a fire-breathing conservative like me thinks that this is the best pick we're going to get. And he would be a good pick for a Republican, frankly, as well. And that's the truth. No spin. So go for it. Now, let's step out and check traffic before we get onto the... Thank you, sir. Sorry, the call screening program is locked out. And apparently, if I push this little button on Windows 7, it requires that the computer starts talking to me. I had no idea if you guys heard that. All right, someone else is going to have to control alt delete because I'm locked out of the computer for call screening. But the phone number is 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Yeah, I see a text coming through from a buddy of mine to repeat what I said at the very end. Yeah, if a Republican president nominated Dax Lopez based on his record, based on his background, based on where he is and the people who are supporting him in the Federalist Society, the Chamber of Commerce and whatnot, he would be a logical person for a Republican to pick as well. And Republicans would be falling all over themselves to praise him and get him on the bench, and they would. I don't have a problem with the guy. He's the best pick we could possibly have here in Georgia, the Northern District of Georgia. The Northern District covers the, it's kind of weird, they're diagonal, the districts. There's the Southern District, the Middle District, and the Northern District. The Middle District actually covers Athens, Macon, Albany. The Southern District, Brunswick, Valdosta, Waycross, Savannah. Then the Northern District, Atlanta, up to Gainesville, that area. And he would be a good pick. And I know they're cutting a deal. I know they are. I have a credible source telling me they're mapping out Harry Reid and Mitch McConnell this year. One of the issues is judges. And if they don't get Dax Lopez, they're going to get someone else. And that someone else is going to be far worse. So let's get a move on with him. Now, let's get into the other news of the day. Johnny Isaacson, Lynn Westmoreland is retiring. The third district, is it? Yes, the third district. The Peachtree City, Coweta County. You know, so I ran a political race one time that was through Coweta County. And I say Coweta County, Coweta County. That's how you remember, Coweta County. Because I said Coweta. No, I was told by the people of Noonan. No. It's Coweta. It's kind of like when you go to Nevada. We all say Nevada. No, people in Nevada say Nevada. So, yeah, I see a friend, by the way, on Lopez saying, Roberts was a good choice, too. That hasn't worked out so good. You're absolutely right. But Roberts isn't a wackadoo liberal. Roberts is still 75% of his record on the bench for the Supreme Court is conservative. Yes, he wasn't good on Obamacare. There have been a number of things he's tried to cut deals on. But 75% of the time he votes with Alito, Scalia, and Thomas, including on marriage issues. I would rather Roberts than an Elena Kagan or a Sonia Sotomayor. And if we don't get Dax Lopez, we're going to get somebody like that. This Westmoreland thing, the implications of it, I want to talk about this because there's a danger for conservatives in Georgia on the retirement of Lynn Westmoreland they may not be thinking about. And I want to explain when we come back right here on News 95.5 AM 750 WSB. Welcome back. It's Eric Erickson here. News 95.5 AM 750 WSB. I can get into the call screening program now. Here we go, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK is the phone number. You can also email me at Eric, E-R-I-C-K, at theresurgent.com. By the way, do me a favor, please, and go there, theresurgent.com. The Stone Ridge Group up in Alpharetta helped me build this website. And one of the cool things that they did is they made the mobile version of it as easy and beautiful to read as the desktop version. It is a gorgeous website, if I do say so myself. The lack of clutter, the ease to read, and we're going to be incorporating some tools into it in the next week. So there is a really cool thing for activists to make it easy for people to connect to their legislator, to find them on social media, Facebook and Twitter and whatnot. And as the craft beer vote and the religious liberty legislation goes, I'm going to be incorporating some serious activist tools. You know, one thing I've learned from the religious liberty fight last year is that a lot of Christians sit on their hands and they're going to pray for God to make it rain and they're not going to go do anything. Now, that may sound harsh to you, but it's the reality. A number of Christians who've decided to sit on the sidelines, and they're not going to worry about it. Bring on the persecution. They think, hey, we're also Americans. I mean, Peter was very clear in First and Second Peter, we're entitled, as was Paul, entitled to our rights as citizens of this country. You know, that was Paul's whole thing in the Bible, in his missionary trips and on his way to Rome, where he was eventually executed, is he was appealing to the authority of the emperor. As a citizen of Rome, he wasn't just saying, oh, I'm a Christian, whatever happens, happens. No, he was appealing as a citizen of Rome. Christians have got to get active on these issues. My book, You Will Be Made to Care, comes out February 22nd, and it is shocking what's happening in the country, and in large part, it's because you got a lot of people of faith who are sitting on the sidelines. So I want to make it easy as part of the resurgent for them to engage and get off the sidelines. Make it easy for you to engage while you're sitting in your office. This whole idea of a resurgence of community, conservative, Christian activists, that's part of the resurgent. So go to theresurgent.com. And it is The Resurgent. And check it out. I'm enamored with my own website. And I realize I should be, but a lot of care went into font choices. And the logo is so awesome. I've got so many people who are telling me, hey, I want that logo on my gun case. I want that logo on a t-shirt. I'm going to make that easy as well. And at some point, maybe WSB is going to throw me a book launch party too. Hint, hint. So we can do book autographs and stuff. When we come back, Lynn Westmoreland, he is... retiring, the implications for conservatives. Welcome back. It's Eric Erickson here. News 95.5 AM 750 WSB. So Congressman Lynn Westmoreland is going to retire from Congress. Now, there have been two rumors for a while that just get under the radar and disappear. And I think a lot of people know these things and they go away. I mean, I've heard since Boehner stepped down that Lynn Westmoreland was going to retire. And one of the reasons is Boehner and Westmoreland have been very good friends in Congress. In fact, Westmoreland went as kind of a conservative hero to Congress. And once he got there, he just more and more over time, friends with Boehner and whatnot, just kind of became a disappointment to a lot of conservative groups in D.C. who felt like he just was putting party above principle. Nice guy. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't want to be slighting Lynn Westmoreland. I'm just telling you, conservative groups in D.C. became disappointed with him, but never enough to try to mount a challenge against him, a credible challenge against him. They didn't. His voting record, more or less, was conservative. People who say Lynn Westmoreland is not a conservative don't know what they're talking about. He is a conservative, but he wasn't one of those anti-establishment conservatives, the guys who are rocking the boat and moving the party in the right. He was more of a status quo guy and a friend of John Boehner, and he wasn't going to rock the vote, and he was going to stand with Boehner and defend Boehner through thick or thin, and Boehner's gone, so now he's out. This presents a problem for conservatives in Georgia. The reason it presents a problem for conservatives in Georgia is if you look at the state house and state senate, a good chunk of the conservative members, a good chunk of the people who, for example, supported the religious liberty fight and opposed the $1 billion tax increase, they're from the 3rd district. Under Georgia law, obviously, you can't run for two seats at once. So if you're going to run for Lynn Westmoreland's seat, you can't run for your state legislative seat. Now, Congress is full-time and the state legislature isn't, so it may be tempting. But the danger for conservatives is they get a bunch of guys in there to decide that I'm going to be the conservative, and one, suddenly, you lose a significant portion of the conservatives in the state legislature who are willing to stand up to their own party. And two, only one of them can do it. So you got a number of people who turn out to be on a suicide mission and lose. And if they don't get together, they don't collaborate, they don't talk, and they don't decide that you're going to be the guy and we're all going to rally around you, well, then what they risk doing is a bloodbath among conservatives in an effort to go to Congress to be one of 435 members of the House of Representatives. That is a real problem because there are so few conservatives in the state House and state Senate willing to stand up and tell their own side no. I mean, I'm sure Casey Cagle and David Ralston would love to get rid of some of these conservatives, would love for them to battle each other to claim Lynn Westmoreland's seat. And conservatives need to make sure that doesn't happen. By the way, the other rumor, I'll tell you what it is. It involves David Ralston after we check traffic with Doug Turnbull. So the other rumor that I have heard now, this rumor, well, probably since last summer, and I mentioned it a couple times just in passing on radio slightly, and I'm hearing it so much now from judges and legislators that I might as well tell you, there's a rumor circulating as, the legislature is going to meet, next week or week after? The rumor is that David Ralston is going to get a seat in the judiciary, that he's going to get a Superior Court seat, that he wants out. That's the rumor floating. It is floating among House guys. It is floating among a couple of members of the Supreme Court I've talked to. It's floating among some Superior Court judges and state court judges I know. Floating along, a lot of lawyers in Atlanta have brought this up when I've gone out to dinner and had conversations in terms of politics. And Ralston, this issue comes up that Ralston wants out. So he saddled the House Republicans with the legacy of a $1 billion tax increase. He opposed efforts to stop Christian persecution. Everyone who Ralston has been aligned with, their heir apparents have gone down in flames over the $1 billion tax increase. It's going to be a campaign issue for conservatives if they can find challengers. A lot of these guys, Beth Baskin, Brett Harrell, Wendell Willard, a lot of them, if you can find good conservatives, make the $1 billion tax increase in RFRA, campaign issues that would hurt them, would resonate. I would bring them up regularly on air. And Ralston's abandoning them all. He wants to be a judge. The governor's going to rescue him, apparently. Really, the governor's not doing anything other than doing a favor for the Republicans in the House, if this is so. Ralston, for a while, I think, has been past his expiration date in there. But that's the rumor. That he wants a judicial seat. It's been guaranteed to him. And the issue is, when does he go? Does he go during the session or does he go after the session? I don't know whether, again, it's just a rumor, but it is a rumor that has picked up steam. I'm surprised nobody's reported it in the newspaper yet because I'm hearing it everywhere now. So much so that I don't have any doubt. Very much like with, Mike, what's his name? Over there in DeKalb County, who opposed the religious liberty legislation and then got a judicial pick once he killed it. Jumped out and got to see Mike Jacobs. Yes, same thing's happening here with the speaker. The rumor started long before Jacobs left to go be a judge. Same thing's happening with Ralston. Not going to be surprised when it happens. And boy, look at the mess he's going to leave the Republicans in. Welcome! Eric Erickson here. So this ad, I just got this. This ad has just started playing in New Hampshire. You're going to hear it here first. It's a Make America Awesome is the political action committee. It's the anti-Trump pack. They just put this commercial up. Haven't even
Christmas
heard it yet.
Leave you feeling stressed, maybe a little broke. Most of us know that feeling. We could use someone on our side fighting for a better economy and higher wages. Some folks say that's Donald Trump, and they think they know him from the character he plays on TV. But Trump's real record? Not so fast. That $10 billion he claims he's worth. Forbes magazine says Trump's exaggerating, claiming to be a lot richer than he really is. Maybe he hopes you'll forget his companies have gone bankrupt 4 times. Trump says American workers are paid too much. Maybe that's why he's been caught importing cheap foreign workers. And Trump's casinos have slashed worker benefits. The Washington Post says the way Donald Trump got richer was at the expense of taxpayers or the banks and investors who loaned him money. He's even used government power to seize private property and brags about it. That's the real Trump record, fighting for himself, not for us. Make America Awesome paid for this ad and is solely responsible for its contents, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Got some friends who made it. I just don't like, that's the voice was too monotone. I don't know. I mean, I see what they're getting at, but no. I don't think that's going to, I mean, I think there are going to be things that hurt Trump, but I don't think that's going to be it. It's a good first effort, I guess. When we come back, I want to get out of presidential politics, and I want to talk about the current president, Barack Obama, president of the United States. Oh, and we got to talk about Jeb Bush. I mean, Bush is on death watch, Deadpool. When's he going to drop out of the race? Probably after New Hampshire, but it may be before. I don't know. But when we come back, I want to talk about Barack Obama. I want to talk about Barack Obama's, Well, he's having a, is it a psychotic break? I don't know. The whole left having a psychotic break from reality. Amazing audio out of the State Department where they essentially admit they're ignoring reality in favor of fantasy, just like Obama on guns. It really is amazing audio. You've got to hear this as soon as we come back. It's a verified account. Oh boy. Welcome to the program. It's Eric Erickson here. News 95.5 AM 750 WSB. So, you know, the Tia Tequila, she's, I don't even know what she's for some reason considered a celebrity. She's writing in all caps on Twitter, and she's come out admitting she believes in the flat earth. Yeah. When you leave the Earth's atmosphere at 80,000 feet, which you can't because you're in Earth prison, you'll enter more water. That's why sky is blue. Seriously. Mountain Dew causes tooth decay and brain damage. This is why so many people who shop at Walmart are malfunctioned. These are actual tweets. These are actual tweets. Oh my goodness. This just can't be real. How come in all the fake NASA CGI pics of the Earth, you can never see background stars and planets? Because it's fake. You're all going to feel stupid when I post the proof that flat Earth. Wow. Okay. So we've got it appears to be a, unless someone has just hacked her account. We have a Hollywood celebrity on record as being in favor of believing flat earth. I kid you not. Oh, great googly moogly. You didn't expect to have that when we came back on air, did you? No, of course you didn't. Wow. Can we move on to other things now? My goodness. I got to talk about the president and Fantasyland at the White House. It's not just a part of Magic Kingdom. It is the Obama administration. These guys are living in flat out Fantasyland. They are in denial about what's going on in the world. They're in denial about what to do in this country, and they just want to do political theater to just do something, even though that something is not going to get anything done. I want to tell you what I mean. You've got to hear this audio from the Associated Press. You've got to hear it. It happened this afternoon. It is unreal that a reporter would confront a retired Rear Admiral, John Kirby, who's now the State Department spokesman. It is unreal someone would confront him on this. Also, phones, we'll do phones, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's go first to Doug Turnbull, who's checking out that flat earth. Oh, my goodness. Okay, folks, you got to listen to this audio. This is Matt Lee. He's an Associated Press reporter at the State Department in a Q&A session with John Kirby, retired Rear Admiral, now the State Department spokesman. Listen to this.
And then the last one is, and every time this happens, the line comes out from people in this administration and other governments as well, is that we will not accept North Korea as a nuclear armed state. And yet it is. You also say this about other things too. You say you will never accept Crimea as a part of Russia, and yet it is. Isn't it time to recognize these things for what they are and not live in this illusion or fantasy where you pretend that things that are not?
The short answer is no. But I would challenge.
It's preferable to live in a
fantasy world. This idea that it's a fantasy world. Just because. Let me put it this way. You know, at this level of foreign policy, you know, you have to make choices. And you don't have to accept everything.
You have to accept reality.
Even at face value. No,
you don't have to accept reality.
To accept North Korea is a nuclear armed state. And we're not going to recognize that. We are, however, going to deal with
the fact that they are a nuclear armed state.
Their efforts at developing that program.
So we're just not going to accept it. They're going to put their fingers in there and say, la, 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 la. No, 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 no. Oh, my goodness. Remember Bill Clinton on North Korea?
Before I take your questions, I'd like to say just a word about the framework with North Korea that Ambassador Gallucci signed this morning. This is a good deal for the United States. North Korea will freeze and then dismantle its nuclear program. South Korea and our other allies will be better protected. The entire world will be safer as we slow the spread of nuclear weapons. South Korea, with support from Japan and other nations, will bear most of the cost of providing North Korea with fuel to make up for the nuclear energy it is losing. And they will pay for an alternative power system for North Korea that will allow them to produce electricity while making it much harder for them to produce nuclear weapons. The United States and international inspectors will carefully monitor North Korea to make sure it keeps its commitments. Only as it does so will North Korea fully join the community of nations.
Oh, I mean, it's like the universe, the cosmic karma, even though I don't believe in it, it's conspiring to just sabotage Hillary Clinton. So her husband structured the deal with North Korea, and now they've had a hydrogen bomb test there. Although you've got some people saying, no, it wasn't actually a hydrogen bomb. It was all for show. But you got other people, including the people along the Chinese border, who are saying, oh, we're pretty sure it was a bomb going off. Felt like an earthquake. Houses in rubble. Did you know the same person who negotiated the North Korean deal also negotiated the Iranian deal? Great. Here's Josh Ernst at the White House.
Josh, Happy New Year.
Same to you.
I want to follow up on something Margaret was asking, and that is the broader strategy vis-a-vis North Korea working, given that since 2009 there's been no conversation? Is it working, would you say, or not working?
Well, we have not yet seen the kinds of results that we would like to see, but what we have succeeded in doing is making North Korea more isolated than ever before and the international community more united than ever before, that the North Koreans need to end their provocative acts, give up their nuclear program, and actually commit to a process that will bring greater peace and stability to the Korean Peninsula.
Is it your view that the president bears some responsibility for this based on the fact that they haven't been talking to North Korea, the six-party talks haven't been moving forward? Is there any responsibility from this perspective, the U.S., given the fact that actors like Assad and Putin and now Aung and even Iran continue to sort of poke their finger in the chest of the United States?
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think that's the situation that we see.
Y'all, these people are denying. It's like guns, you know. It's like the gun situation. The very same people who were just a month ago ridiculing anyone who offered prayers and thoughts for San Bernardino, which is overwhelmed that the president cried, that he cried when he announced his actions on guns. Meanwhile, within 24 hours, the Associated Press comes out and says what the president did about guns would not stop any mass shooter from having acquired their guns ever. But he thought happy thoughts. I know that the Obama administration is run by a bunch of pothead FM types, but I can't believe they've had a complete psychotic break with reality. But none of these people are living in reality. Now, I don't know what stoner village they're living in, fueled by Chipotle and E. coli, but they are not living in the reality that we're living in. North Korea tested a nuclear weapon, and what the president did about guns won't do jack to stop mass shootings. Oh, and by the way, you know what has risen while gun violence in this country has gone down? What's gone up are the number of jihadists gunning us down in our own country because of this president's policies. Welcome back. Eric Erickson here. The phone number 404 1-800-270-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Let's go to the phones, shall we? Let's go to Todd in Norcross. Welcome, Todd.
Hey, Eric. Yeah, about North Korea. Don't worry. Dennis Rodman is getting on an airplane as we speak, and he's going to go over there and bring James Taylor and sing a song, and they're going to get everything straightened out. So.
You are right. They may even take Jimmy Carter with them.
Yeah. And, you know, with the gun control thing, can you tell me what kind of background checks do the Mexican cartels go through before Fast and Furious? You know, Eric Holder,
yes.
Obama, giving them all those guns. How many Americans would be alive today if they actually enforced some of the immigration laws?
Well, we know at least one Border Patrol agent would be alive today if they actually enforced the law the way it was intended to be enforced. Yeah.
Agent Terry and 200 Mexican nationals were killed with those guns, too.
Yeah, I don't know that they gave them background checks. I'm sure some of them came back into this country and resold them at Amazon.com, like the president was saying the other day. It's just so easy to sell them online.
Right. And, you know, when you're talking about reality, I remember when they were saying Yemen was a success. And what I remember is that our Marines actually had to surrender their weapons before they left the country.
Oh, if we wouldn't laugh, we would cry. And remember, Al-Qaeda was on the run.
Yeah, yeah, and,
you know. They live in an absolute, different reality from you and me, Todd. Thanks very much. They don't live in reality. I mean, they are in fantasy land at Magic Kingdom, sparking up, getting high. I mean, it is a world that normal people can't connect to. I have no idea what's going on in the White House. They are detached. I don't know if it's a complete psychotic break, but they are detached from reality. They need some Thorazine in their lives, I guess. When we come back, Jeb Bush's campaign. Oh my goodness, it's over. I'll tell you how I know. I'm supposed to keep talking, aren't I? Forgot about that. Welcome back. It's Eric Erickson here. The phone number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I got to get into the Jeb Bush thing, but first, buddy of mine just sent me this article. This is from the College Fix. This is not a joke, folks. Black college students across the country have demanded that they be segregated from white peers, calling for safe spaces on campuses meant for only for so-called students of color. The requests for segregated spaces are found among some of the demand lists put forth by students who took part in protests this fall, alleging their campuses are oppressive, discriminatory, and represent institutionalized racism. The demands have been presented to campus administrators and are chronicled by thedemands.org, a website run by a racial advocacy group called the Black Liberation Collective. Let's get this straight. Oh, the African Student Union at UCLA is insisting upon an African diaspora floor as well as an Afro house. No whites allowed. I'm not making this stuff up. Oh my goodness. Black students want to be segregated. Didn't we have a civil rights struggle? We shall overcome, where we won't be judged by the color of our skin, but by the quality of our character. No, they want segregation. You know, down in Macon, they got an old rail depot down there, terminal station, they call it, downtown Macon. And they keep the signs up that say, no blacks allowed, white water fountain only. You know why they keep those? I was on city council and there was a push by some uppity young liberals from Merce University who had come down from up north who wanted to get rid of the signs because they, all white, were offended by the signs. You know why they keep them? Why the black community insists on they be kept? To remind people what it was like. There is, I'm not making this up, in Macon, Georgia, you know, Macon has racial problems, and a lot of it stems from the 50s and 60s in the Department of Transportation. There is in Macon a house that everyone refers to as the half house. See, there was a prosperous middle-class black neighborhood in Macon. Little Richard was born there. James Brown was born there, among others. Otis Redding was born there. And there was a middle-class white neighborhood called Shirley Hills. And instead of building the interstate through Macon between the communities, they bulldozed the middle of Pleasant Hill. It's now a third-world hellhole. And there have been racial tensions ever since. And one of the houses that remains is called the Half House. And, you know, if the government takes your property, they got to pay you for your property. Well, they only took half this house, boarded up the side of it, and they didn't pay the homeowner anything. Because they didn't take their property. They just took half the house. They didn't take the whole thing, so they never paid them. House is still there. That's what it was like. These things happened. And now you got a bunch of pretentious, overprivileged kids on college campuses calling them oppressive, discriminatory, and institutionalized racism. Go to an historically black college. Go to Howard. Go to Morehouse. Go somewhere other than UCLA. Wow. When you forget, history may not repeat itself, but it certainly does rhyme. Holy cow. Okay. Jeb Bush, after we check traffic with Doug Turnbull. Doug Turnbull, I thank you, sir. So here's one of the things that I learned as a political consultant and strategist. You don't buy billboards. Campaigns that buy billboards, they're not getting bang for the buck. Now, for marketing purposes, billboards may be worthwhile. But for a political campaign, it's a waste of money. Because you want to target the people who are going to go vote. You want to specifically target voters. When you put up a billboard, a good 60% of the people who see the billboards are never going to go vote at all, let alone for you. So why bother? The Jeb Bush Super PAC has put up billboards now. And it says, quote, Donald Trump is unhinged. And underneath the little dash, Jeb Bush. A quote from Jeb Bush. It's red with white letters. This is the Bush campaign, folks. They either have so much money they don't know what to do with it, or they're out of ideas. It's just not working. They've decided to become an anti-Rubio, anti-Trump campaign. Bush is no longer running to be president. He's not running. Jeb Bush is no longer running to be president. He knows it's over. I had several interactions in the last 48 hours, the last 24 hours in particular, after I said the establishment needs to rally around Rubio, had several interactions with this campaign, and either they didn't after I explained what I was thinking, they never replied back, or the ones who did reply back said a lot of them were headed that way. Begrudgingly, because they don't care for Rubio, Jeb Bush's campaign, he's walking around. A reporter earlier put up a picture of Bush. He looks defeated, out of energy. His campaign's running billboards or his super PAC. What a waste of money for a presidential campaign. I think he's done and he knows it. But he's decided he's going to be the guy to blow up Trump. But you know what the reality is? Jeb Bush, get his brother out. Get George out to blow up Trump. It only helps Trump. And that they don't realize it kind of explains why Jeb Bush is out of gas. Oh, mercy me. Speaking of Jeb Bush, apparently he said this evening in New Hampshire that he's better looking than Chris Christie is a reason to vote for him. I'm not kidding. My goodness. Holy moly. Okie dokie, folks. I'm sorry. Speaking of Chris Christie, by the way, Chris Christie has changed his mind on guns. If you go to theresurgent.com, I've got this up because you need to see why he changed his mind on guns. I've got the quotes. Chris Christie changing his mind on guns. And this is his quote. On Wednesday, this is from the Politico, he credited his experience as a federal prosecutor for the shift. I learned the difference. And I learned what the limitations are of these laws that people are talking about and how they much, much more greatly infringe on law-abiding citizens than they do anything to prevent crime. Having learned that, my position's changed, he said. He's now not in favor of gun control. Let's go back 3 years to 2013, where as governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie signed legislation to prevent people who were on the no-fly list from buying guns without a due process hearing. As a former federal prosecutor, he said, I understand the obligation of government to ensure the safety and security of its people. And then he urged Congress to just clean up the database so people aren't wrongly put on there. Seriously. So 3 years ago, he said, as a former federal prosecutor, he understood that the government needs to be there to keep people safe. And that's why he's willing to sign gun control legislation. And 3 years later, he says, as a former federal prosecutor, I learned that the laws don't necessarily keep people safe. They got to keep themselves. This is the biggest flip-flop this year. It is bigger than anything any of the other candidates have done. This would be the equivalent of Jeb Bush coming out tomorrow and renouncing Common Core. Why did Chris Christie do it? Well, Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio. Chris Christie is suddenly finding himself competitive in places like Iowa, New Jersey, or New Hampshire, rather. They're both gun-loving states. He's got to do something. Holy cow, folks. What a flip-flop. And I don't mean to beat up Chris Christie. He's not going to be president. But you and I both know, were he somehow able to get the nomination, Chris Christie would have a sister soldier moment like Bill Clinton did in the 90s. He would suddenly renounce his current flip and flop back. Good gracious. We're out of time, folks. I'll see you guys tomorrow.